Welcome to another edition of the PapaCast. I'm Bob Papa, getting ready for Wild Card Weekend, and just want to alert all the subscribers out there. If you want more in-depth stuff on the New York Football Giants, make sure you subscribe to the PapaCast Giants Cast. That is Giants specific. But here on the PapaCast, we're going to span the entire National Football League. Who better to do it than with my broadcast partner from Sirius XM, NFL Radio, a man with many hats when it comes to the football season, the incomparable Ross Tucker. Ross, how are you, buddy?
Bob, fantastic. Always good to talk with you. Always good to be on the PapaCast.
Yeah, so listen, I know this is a busy weekend for you. So as I mentioned to the listeners, for the Giants-specific podcast, it's the PapaCast Giants Cast. I know you've got a whole bunch of new podcasts coming out this week, getting ready for Wild Card Week. And why don't you let the listeners know where they can go and find it and what you got cooking?
Well, every day I've got the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. That's daily. That's kind of going over everything going on in the NFL. Andrew Brandt, Greg Cosell, those guys join me. And then if you're playing fantasy football in the postseason or DFS, I've got the Fantasy Feast with Evan Silva from Roto-World. If you like to make the games a little more interesting, Steve Fezzik joins me on the Even Money podcast. And then I got the College Draft podcast, which that time of year for a bunch of teams out there, it's full throttle, full speed towards the draft. So it's fun to break down the national championship game, Clemson and Alabama, and also talk about all these guys going pro, the Senior Bowl, all that stuff with the College Draft podcast with Fran Duffy.
All right, so there's a lot there on the plate with Mr. Tucker, and before we get to the wild card games, I want to dial into you with some of this coaching stuff. And I know you played for Buffalo. I know you have an affinity for that organization. You consider yourself a Buffalo Bill. Can it be any more dysfunctional? I mean, it's ridiculous with what's going on up there. It seems like one hand's not talking to the other. Everyone thought that when the Pegulas bought the team, you know, there was so much momentum keeping them in Buffalo. Their interest in the Sabres, which on another note, they've struggled as a hockey team under their ownership. But my goodness gracious, I'm not saying Rex Ryan should or should not have been fired. You can make a case as to why he was let go. But Doug Whaley gets a third crack at a head coach, and they don't seem to know. He didn't seem to know why Rex Ryan got fired. Seems a little weird to me.
The whole thing's bizarre. And what bothers me about it, Bob, and I think you and I have probably talked about this on the radio, Doug Whaley has said a number of things over the last couple of years about, you know, whether it's Shaq Lawson's health or the roster or certain contracts or certain guys that make me wonder if he's fit to be a general manager, because you just can't make some of the comments he's made and expect people to believe that you know what you're doing. And now this is maybe even a worse example, in that there are clearly questions that he knew were going to be asked to him, and he didn't come up with a better answer. Even if it's true, you better get a better game plan. I mean, you better get a better game plan, and you need to come across as something other than, no, I really don't know why they fired Rex. I was just told that you're not working with Rex anymore, and you know, I didn't even know about it at first. I mean, it makes it look really, really poor. And maybe it's semantics, and maybe he's just trying to play it off that way. But how you present yourself to the media is how you're presenting yourself to your fans and the level of confidence or lack thereof that you're inspiring in them. And when you come on and say, I didn't really know, and, you know, all that kind of stuff, it makes you look like the organization doesn't know what it's doing. And it's sad because they're not that far away. You know, they do have some talent. And even just the way they've handled the Tyrod Taylor situation on multiple levels, it comes across as a really, really bad look. It's no surprise they lost to the Jets the way they did. When you sit Tyrod Taylor, you're sending a message to your team, even though he's healthy, that we don't care about winning this football game. So go out there and do your best, guys, but we don't really care.
You know, it seems like Buffalo, Jacksonville, which seems entrenched as far as, you know, the GM making a decision on the head coach, maybe the Rams to a lesser degree. We could get to the Rams in a second. But some of these situations, it's almost as if they're ruling out or they're discouraging the highly qualified candidate to come in there, whether it's a Tom Coughlin that has a legitimate winning resume. To me, if I was one of these franchises that has a lot of talent but it needs direction, I would place a call to Brian Billick and at least find out the interest level. But it seems as if in some of these places where jobs are open, they want to steer it to a guy that's going to sort of just take whatever they're given and is not going to come in and assert authority, which to me leads to potentially more of the same.
Well, and what's funny about that in my mind, Bob, is, you know, like in Jacksonville, David Caldwell, certainly his argument to Shad Khan, he's the general manager there, would be, hey, look at the talent we have on this team. You know, look at it. I have brought in, we have good talent. My argument to that would be, dude, you have the top five pick every year, and you've spent more money in free agency the last 2 years than anybody. I hope you have a couple good players, you know? And evidently, by the way, the players aren't that good. Otherwise, you would have won more games. I don't care who the coach is. You would have won more games if the players were really that good, even though they've spent like crazy now 3 years in a row, and they've had a top five pick seemingly every year. They don't have that much talent. The other thing about it, Bob, that bothers me is if you remember, you know, when Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell came in together, it was these guys are on the same page. These guys are tied at the hip. Same thing with Griggs and Pagano in Indy, Telesco and McCoy in San Diego. But you know what ends up happening? McCoy, the coach, is gone. Bradley, the coach, is gone. We'll see what happens with Griggs and Pagano, who got extensions last year. But Telesco's still there. Caldwell's still there. So you can't really tell me that these guys are tied at the hip unless they're really tied at the hip. Which, by the way, I guess they will be tied at the hip this time if it's the GMs like Whaley and Caldwell and Telesco that are making these hires.
You know, the Rams' job is an interesting one because I think we're gonna find out a lot about what people think of Jared Goff. I mean, it's an attractive job because the owner's going to spend money. It's L.A. It's going to be a primetime spot and so on and so forth. And when you take a look at that defense and you take a look at that running back, you know, if you could add on the skill position and get guys that are going to finish routes and actually catch the ball and shore up that O-line a little bit, you could probably turn that thing around and get that thing winning in the right direction. But the key thing here is they've mortgaged everything to move up to get Jared Goff. And we're going to find out, you know, with some of these smart guys, whether it's a Josh McDaniels or whomever, what they really think of Jared Goff. Because if there are guys out there that potentially could be head coaches and they really don't think that this kid's any good, they're going to stay away from that job because you can't go in there and say, well, let's give it 1 year and then I want to blow him out. I mean, you've got to ride this thing for at least 2 years because he barely played this year. We're going to find out, aren't we, a lot about what people on the inside of the NFL really think of Jared Goff.
Well, that's the part that's most interesting to me is what you said about how long you'd have to stay committed to him. Because you think about the money the Texans committed to Brock Osweiler, but Bill O'Brien was willing to bench him in his first year. So if you're the head coach that comes in, certainly Jared Goff would get, you know, all of next year. But if next year he's awful, I wouldn't be surprised if the Rams would at least let you bring another option in to compete with Goff in 2018. Because as you and I always talk about, Bob, that wouldn't be your pick. That wouldn't be your guy. Jared Goff would not be your guy. Now, you're coming in to say I'm going to try to fix him. But if after a year it's clear that he's not the guy, they're going to let you get another guy. I look at Jay Gruden with RG3 and Kirk Cousins. Jay Gruden sold Daniel Snyder and Bruce Allen on his ability to fix RG3. Then he got there and he was like, yeah, this guy stinks. This other guy's definitely better. And eventually it played out that way. And now they made the playoffs last year. And, boy, they blew a golden opportunity in a couple games, Carolina and the New York Giants team, to go to the playoffs this year, because they've got the right quarterback in Kirk Cousins. So I'm not so sure that you're right about you'd have to be with golf for 2 years. I think golf for 1 year, and then you'd be able to at least bring in somebody else, another option in 2018. So you get two bites at the quarterback apple, so to speak.
Have you ever seen, you know, we always talk about windows. Have you ever seen a window that was open in San Francisco and, I mean, completely shut down as fast as the Niners have? I mean, they might now be the laughingstock of the NFL.
Yeah, well, I'd say as recently as maybe 3 years ago, they had, I thought, still the best roster in the NFL. Certainly 2013, yeah. And then now they've got arguably the worst roster in the NFL. That's hard to do. I mean, if you think about it, even if you were trying to do that, it wouldn't be that easy. Now, in fairness to them, they did have a bunch of guys retire. I mean, some of the best defensive players in the league retired, but they did an absolutely awful job of restocking the talent base behind them. And now they're a team that's a sad situation. But I wonder if it's a decent situation to go into as a coach, because there's nowhere to go but up at 2-14. And you got to think that at this point, Jed York, their owner, has to be patient with the new head coach he brings. And after being one and done with two guys, you got to expect to get at least 2 years, hopefully 3 years. And I'll also say this, Bob. Jed York's getting a lot of flack, and understandably so. You know, having to blow out a coach for the second year in a row. But he is now, with Chip Kelly's staff and Jim Tomsula's staff, he owes $69 million to those staffs. $69 million. I can't think of very many owners that would be willing to eat that much money to try to turn things around and get it right. So I'll give him credit in that regard for not being afraid to spend to try to fix things.
All right, last coaching question. Rex Ryan got 2 years in Buffalo. We saw how it ended with the Jets. Todd Bowles is still cleaning up some of the mess when we talk about, you know, instability, unaccountability, and so on and so forth. Buffalo, you know, 10 guys on the field, Rex and Rob and the sideshow and all that other stuff. Have we seen, in your opinion, the end of Rex Ryan as a head coach in the NFL, or do you think he'll get a third bite at the apple somewhere?
No, I don't think we've seen the end. I think that he is going to end up being a head coach again probably in 2 or 3 years. I think he'll do television for a couple years, sound bites, ha-ha-ha, chuckle, stay in the public consciousness in that way, and then some franchise, whether it's like the Tennessee Titans or the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Buffalo Bills, obviously it wouldn't be them, but a franchise like that, Bob, that I think will crave relevancy. They'll crave, you know, at least people talking about them, maybe ticket sales. I still think Rex Ryan brings that to the table. So I don't know when it'll be, maybe 2, 3, 4 years. My guess is that absence will make the heart grow fonder for Rex while he's doing television, and somebody in a small market or mid-market city will give him one more shot.
All right, I want to get your take on the Giants wide receivers on their off day, going down to Miami, having fun. A picture popped up on social media that went viral. Much to do about nothing, said Giants head coach Ben McAdoo, as all season long, once the players are done on Sunday, they have no responsibilities unless, you know, they're required to come in for treatment on a Monday. Until meetings on Tuesday. You got any problem with what they did?
No, I don't think it's a big deal. You know, it is their off day, and players can do what they want to do on their off day. I don't think it has any impact, Bob, on Sunday's game. But, and maybe this is just a prism of how I was as a player, I never once in my 7 years did not go into the facility every day. So even on my off day, I would go in there and I'd get a workout in. I'd go in the ice tub, you know, the cold tub, the hot tub. I'd watch some film. Now, that wasn't everybody. So I don't want to say that that's the only way to do it, because there were other guys that felt like they needed a mental break, felt like they just needed a day away from that facility, and maybe those Giants guys at the end of a long regular season, they just needed mentally to let it loose a little bit, have some fun before re-engaging. And if that's the case, then that's great. Like I said, either way, I don't think it affects the game or what will happen on Sunday. In fact, I think the Giants will probably win that game. But if you're asking me if I were a teammate or if I were a fan, if I would like it, probably not. I'd probably rather see them getting some work in at the facility, even though it's their off day.
You know, I learned something early in my career, you know, when I was more of the player's age, and this is like in the late 80s, 1990, 91, 92. I never realized this, but, you know, when I was doing a show in the city, the coach's show, on a Monday night, you know, we'd have a player that would come in and spend half the show after the coach did the first half, and then we'd go out. And I remember going out, and the China Club was the big spot in Manhattan at the time and some other clubs. And I was shocked. I didn't realize this because, you know, I was naive at the time. How many – because at that time, all the NFL teams had Tuesday off. Now they've kind of changed the schedules a little bit, some of the teams. I was shocked at how many players within legitimate flying distance from teams around the NFL, marquee players – I'd see him in the club every Monday night in Manhattan. And there were a lot of guys from around the NFL that would fly into New York and party it up on a Monday night in New York City. And then I guess fly home on Tuesday, whatever the case was. And to me, that shocked me at first because, you know, I was thinking, you know, everybody's in there. They're thinking about the next game. And I was surprised. This is going way back. But, you know, when players have their off time, it's their off time, and they choose to do whatever they wish, and there's really no legislating against it.
No, and there's some guys that can still do that and play really well. And, you know, I would go out, you know, when we had Tuesday off days, I'd go out on Monday night sometimes, really just to watch Monday night football, usually have a couple beers or whatever. I wouldn't fly to New York, but I still was in the facility that day. Like I said, you know what, Bob, the end result is, if the receivers play well on Sunday and the Giants win, nobody will care. If they play poorly, though, and that's the thing probably more than anything else, is that you open yourself up to a lot of criticism if you go out there and don't play well when pictures like that go viral.
All right, let's get into these games. Wild Card Weekend. We'll start with the first one. You got Houston, who had a who is going to be at home against Oakland. Oakland had a fantastic year. But obviously, you know, if Derek Carr is going to be considered as an MVP, the Raiders fans can't then rip us on Twitter for not liking their chances in the regular season finale with a backup quarterback in there. And some of that got proven true. They were not the same team playing Denver. This is a battle of the quarterback TBDs. I still feel like Oakland from top to bottom is the better football team. And I don't trust Osweiler. As far as I can throw them, I still like the Raiders to win in advance.
I'm going the other way on this one, simply because it looks like Connor Cook is going to make the first start of his NFL career.
This isn't any of your Bill O'Brien. This isn't any of your Bill O'Brien Penn State bias now.
No, not at all. No, I just think Connor Cook first start. At Houston, they have a very good secondary, really good corners. If they can't run the rock behind that offensive line, I think they are in big-time trouble. And Osweiler's been bad, but the Raiders' defense is not great. He's played enough games, enough big games. I think he can control the offense better than Cook. I like the Texans to win a close, low-scoring game in that one.
Seattle, look, I know it's Seattle, and they're a brand, and they won the Super Bowl and a couple of years ago, and they've got a tremendous home field advantage and everything there. But would you not say that Seattle is a little bit more hype based on their performance over the last 4 years than they really are as a football team in 2016? Now, I don't know if Detroit can go in there and beat them, because you can't go into the playoffs any worse than losing three in a row and blowing the division, and they have no running game whatsoever, although Zenner's a fun story. but this Seattle team is gettable, aren't they?
They are. I'm surprised by the line, Bob. When I last looked at it, it was, you know, the Lions getting 8 points, and boy, I feel like people have not really been watching the Seahawks, especially since Earl Thomas got hurt. Defensively, they are not dominant. They have not been. The Niners scored 24 points on them or whatever it was. And offensively, they can't run the ball a lick. Their offensive line really struggles, and you're essentially just counting on, you know, Russell Wilson magic, which I think he'll have enough to beat the Detroit team that's struggling, like you said. But I think it's a really close game. Field goal game one way or the other. I'll go Seattle at home.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what Jim Caldwell does. How do you create a mental partition? Because, listen, despite the fact that they lost 3-0, and let's face it, they lost at the Giants, who's a playoff team and an 11-win team. They lost at Dallas, one of the best teams in the NFL all season. And then they lost to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. It's not like they lost to the Jaguars, you know, and the Bears and Matt Barkley in there. So can Jim Caldwell put up enough of a partition and sell his team on the fact that, hey, guys, it's 0-0. We all have the same record. We're 0-0. To me, I give Detroit a puncher's chance in this one.
Agreed. I mean, it wouldn't shock me at all. What shocks me is what the current betting line is, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of leaning toward Detroit. Usually when something – I don't know why. It's kind of a gut thing, but I'm leaning toward Detroit. Anyway, Sunday, Miami at Pittsburgh. Now, when they met in Miami earlier this year, Big Ben was just coming off his injury, and the Dolphins had been so bad leading up to that game that Vance Joseph, their defensive coordinator, did something I don't think I've ever seen. He called his guys out, especially his defensive linemen. He called them out in the press by name, saying, doesn't matter how much you're getting paid, so-and-so's got to play better. If so-and-so thinks that giving maximum effort is playing hard every three plays, he's mistaken. You got to be a pro, boom, 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 boom. They dominated the line of scrimmage. And their O-line, they got rid of guys, they put different guys in. They whipped the Steelers on both sides of the ball. But that was then, this is now. It feels like Pittsburgh defensively is playing a lot better. They're at home, and they just have so many quick strike capabilities. I don't see how Pittsburgh loses this game.
I don't think Pittsburgh loses either, but this is another one where I'm a little surprised what the so-called experts think with, you know, a team like the Miami Dolphins getting 10 points. I mean, they've been pretty consistent over the last 2 months of the season with the exception of that game in Baltimore. Even against the Patriots, you know, they got down and showed some life. Matt Moore has done a very, you know, commendable job. I think the Steelers probably end up winning by 4 or 7 points, but I don't think it's a double-digit blowout because as well as improved as the Steelers are defensively, all the weapons they have offensively, if you've noticed, they really haven't been blowing people out. They really haven't been putting a ton of points on the board. The Baltimore game, the Cincinnati game, you go right down the line, it's been a lot of close games that the Steelers have won. They're not putting up 35, 40 points like you would think they would with the quarterback, receiver, running back trio they have.
Yeah, no, but it just feels like if it's a close game and Pittsburgh's got, you know, a 4-point lead or a 7-point lead or even an 8-point lead, do you really feel like Matt Moore can drive him down the field and win it? To me, I don't see it happening. I think Pittsburgh wins and moves on. All right, so the piece de resistance of the weekend is a redo of the 2011 NFC divisional round game at Lambeau Field where Eli Manning and the Giants went to Lambeau and beat Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. The Giants have won their last two playoff games at Lambeau, but the rosters are completely different. The Giants' profile as a team is completely different. They're starting to run the ball better, but Aaron Rodgers has developed more and more weapons, like Geronimo Allison the last couple weeks has played big. They've got Jared Cook, a tight end now, adding an element to the middle of the field. And then Ty Montgomery, a running back wearing number 88, they're getting it done. When they beat the Giants on October the 9th, Rodgers didn't play well. I think he had a quarterback rating of like 63 or something like that. Got picked off twice, barely completed 50% of his passes, didn't play well. But what they did was they ran the ball against the Giants. Lacy had like 81 yards. I think they averaged 4.6 a carry, and they ran it for like 140 yards as a team. The Giants in that game averaged 2.9 yards per carry. What is the key in this game for you, and who do you see winning it?
Key is probably, in my mind, the Giants' ability to score, you know, and whether or not Odell Beckham Jr. can make a couple of game-changing plays, because I am totally sold on the Giants' defense. Extremely impressed with what they did against a very good Redskins offense on Sunday. You know, the Packers aren't going to run the ball against the Giants. That would really surprise me with Damon Harrison, especially in the way those guys are playing. Then you make them one-dimensional. Rodgers is really good, but so is the secondary for the Giants. You know, I mean, these corners, Schnorr, Jenkins, DRC, Eli Apple, can really play. And so you're betting on, if you're the Packers, you're betting on Aaron Rodgers just buying time and making a couple plays with his legs and then, you know, guys uncovering after several seconds, because that's really the only chance they have to score offensively in this one. Defensively, have not been impressed with the Packers' secondary, and that's a problem. You know, going against Victor Cruz, and especially Sterling Shepard and Odell Beckham Jr. This is not just because I'm talking to you, Bob. You know, as of when we're recording this, I'm picking the Giants to win the game. I think they win the game about 20-17. I think they do the best job. You know, you look at the Packers, not like they've been blowing teams out either. I mean, I was at their game against the Bears. They've been, as good as Rodgers has been, they've been, you know, barely skating by against most of these teams. I think it's a low-scoring game. I think that that lends itself well to the Giants getting the victory. 2017, Big Blue.
All right, great stuff, Ross. Just give the fans one more pop here of the different podcasts that you have out there on the market that people can enjoy.
Yeah, they're all available over at rostucker.com, so you can check them out there. Obviously, if you're listening to this one, you know how to listen to podcasts. Check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast or the Fantasy Feast or Even Money or the College Draft Podcast. Or if you really like the business side of things, Andrew Brandt has his own podcast as well, The Business of Sports, all available at rostucker.com.
Great stuff, as always. And for Giants fans out there, if you wanted some NFL flavor, you get it from all of Ross' podcasts. You got some on this one. And go to bobpapa.com, iTunes, and check out the PapaCast Giants Cast for Giants-specific and a player interview each and every Friday. Ross, we appreciate the time. Great stuff, and thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Bob. Thanks for having me.
That's the man, Ross Tucker, on this edition of the PapaCast.